Hello and welcome to our podcast, Baby Baking and Kid Raising, hosted by myself, Eliza Carr, a passionate midwife, new mama, and founder of Bump and Bub, as well as my co-host, Dr. Joseph Scorry, an obstetrician, gynecologist, and fertility specialist, as well as a dad of three. Together, we will be discussing topics from fertility through to parenthood and everything in between. Each week, we will be joined by inspiring guests who share their own journeys through fertility, pregnancy, birth, and parenthood, as well as educational episodes from us, a midwife and an obstetrician. Today we're sitting down with the lovely Tina, mum of three, hypnobirthing practitioner and speech pathologist. Tina is an absolute wealth of knowledge regarding all things pregnancy and birth. She has given birth in the private system, the public system, and recently, just weeks ago, at home, where she experienced a beautiful home birth with a private midwife. It's rare to hear from someone who has experienced all three models of care, so we can't wait to dive in today. Thanks so much for coming on our podcast, Tina.
Thanks for having me. So excited to tell you guys my birth story.
I know, we can't wait. Can we kick it off with a little bit about yourself, your family, and where you live?
Yeah, so I live in Sydney with my husband, Michael, and three kids now. So I've got my seven-year-old, five-year-old almost, and a seven-week-old.
So Tina, can you tell us a little bit about each of your births? Today we'd love to focus on your most recent birth, your beautiful home birth with your private midwife. But can you kind of run us through your first two as well? Give us a bit of an overview.
My first baby, well, that was actually a surprise pregnancy. And so I wasn't very prepared. I didn't know, you know, models of care and all those options or anything like that. So I had Alana through the public system, just the antenatal clinic, you know, different midwife each time, and then whoever's on shift, of course, at the birth. And I ended up having, you know, all the things on the list. So, you know, in my hypnobirthing classes, it's good. I can actually talk from experience about most things except for a cesarean. So I ended up, yeah, getting induced, had an epidural, had morphine in there somewhere, forceps, episiotomy. And it wasn't like a bad birth because I had intervention. I want to make that clear. It was more so that I just didn't really know what I was doing, and I kind of just went to the hospital and I was like, yeah, I'm over this. Just get the baby out. I have no tools. I have no, like, you know, it wasn't like an empowered choice. Like, yes, this is the best thing for me and baby. Let's do it. So yeah, after that, I was kind of a bit, yeah, shell shocked. And so I ended up having another, you know, getting pregnant again. So it wasn't that bad, but, and I had my son in the private system. So it's funny because after that first birth, I thought, I'm going to go private. I'm going to get an obstetrician and get my epidural straight away. I'm not going to let them make me wait for this again. And then I did hypnobirthing in my pregnancy and I thought, oh, maybe I'll try to not have it or delay it. So it was totally different. And then I had a pretty much, you know, natural birth that second time in the private hospital, and that was great.
What made you go into hypnobirthing? Was it your first birth kind of ignited a passion for it?
Yeah. So after, well, I just thought I'd try something new to do the course myself. When I was pregnant with my second, and I really loved the course.
Yeah.
Of course, it wasn't until I had the baby and saw how the tools worked and how my mindset had changed that I became passionate about it. And I think the day after I gave birth to my son, I was Googling like, oh, how do I become a practitioner? I was just, yeah, like completely obsessed because I'm not really a person who if someone told me 8 years ago you will have a home birth without any pain relief, I would have laughed in their face because I'm just really scared of pain. I'm not a very fit person. I'm not a hippie. You know, all those stereotypes that people associate with a home birth or no pain relief, like not a very strong. I've never even had laser or got my legs waxed. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, I'm so scared of pain. So I thought if I can do this, then anyone can. That was my feeling after that second birth. So then I became a practitioner. And then I think, you know, after that experience and thinking, yes, it was great birth in the private system, but there were some things that looking back, I didn't really like, and I didn't want those things to happen again. You know, just feeling like I was forced into doing certain tests, or, you know, feeling that pressure to get induced. Oh, if you don't have that baby in a few days, I'm going to, you know, have to book in your induction date, and all those things that were a bit stressful to me. And I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and I don't really want to fight back in pregnancy, especially in birth. Obviously we're all really vulnerable, and I don't want to put up a fight. So I thought, you know, I think I'll look into home birth. And it was then again through people's birth stories that I had taught, and seeing all these mums who have had home births that I taught hypnobirthing to. And then I thought, yeah, definitely when I get pregnant, I've got the midwife's number on speed dial. I'm going to be like booking her in straight away. So that's what, you know, led me to booking that home birth. I'd already been thinking about it for like 5 years almost. So, yeah.
That's amazing, and that you could utilize those skills that you'd, you know, become so passionate about and been teaching. And
yeah.
So, yeah, that's absolutely amazing. And so can you talk us through your third pregnancy in which you decided to have the home birth?
Yeah, so it was definitely my most chilled pregnancy.
I can attest to that. I mean, you were just so relaxed. Yeah. You were just, you looked like a goddess. You were just beautiful.
Thank you. Thanks. You know, part of that is it's your third baby and you don't have time to think about it. I feel like with that first pregnancy, it's all I was thinking about. And getting to 12 weeks, I don't know if you felt that, but getting to 12 weeks was like, oh my gosh, every day is just dragging. 9 weeks in one day, 9 weeks in 2 days, you know. I think I was probably a little bit too anxious that first time. But yeah, this time it just flew by. And so that was a big part of it. And then the other part of it was having that private midwife who just came to my house. That's so cool. I, you know, even if she was running late, it's like, oh, I'll be there, you know, just running late, stuck in traffic or something. I'm like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, clean the kitchen or make a tea or something. You know, I didn't have to wait around in the hospital room, I think, in the waiting room. Yeah, that was really nice. My kids being a part of it was really nice too. So listening to the, you know, to the Doppler and the midwife telling them, oh, that's your little baby brother or sister in there. And, yeah, I think also not having that pressure that I was going to get induced as well was kind of made me chill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I had a date that, oh, it has to happen by this date, or, you know, we're going to do this or that. It felt really relaxed, so I enjoyed it, and part of me thought this could be your last. Could be. I think we're done, but don't quote me, you know, like, you never know. I was like, if we win the lotto, we'll have a fourth, you know? But yeah, I think being my third, I thought, yeah, let's just savor this and, you know, get the photography and like all that stuff. And so I really enjoyed it. I don't know if people kind of want to hear people complaining about pregnancy, but like, as hard as it is on your body, I really just tried my best to enjoy it.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. And I think so many people say when they know or they think it might be their last, they really do like savor it. And
yeah,
it's very different to the first. And I was exactly the same as you, like so anxious every day. I was like, one day closer.
Yeah.
Just have to get to 12 weeks. Just have to get to 20 weeks. Just have to get to. So yeah, that's amazing. And how did you choose your midwife? How did you go about that process once you decided, or once you knew you were pregnant? Yeah. How did you go about the process of choosing a midwife to facilitate that home birth?
Yeah, so I had already chosen her before I got pregnant. So I had two that I was thinking of. One, because she was in the area and she actually attended a couple of my friends' births, one being a surprise breach at home. So I thought, wow, she's super skilled. Like, you know, that's who I want. But there was another one who lived really far away in the Blue Mountains, but she had been at my best friend's birth. And I just thought that was really special. And hearing about the care that she gave my friend, she's also been a midwife for a lot of my mums who I've taught hypnobirthing to as well. So just hearing their experiences with her, I was like, oh, yeah, she just sounds like that's the vibe that I want to go for. And then when I got pregnant and I had a chat to her on the phone, because she said, yeah, we can, you know, chat so you can ask me any questions. I just really loved her. I was like, yeah, she would be my friend. Yeah, and super skilled. So I thought, yeah, I'll book her in.
How does it sort of work? I mean, did you sort of get a sense of the home birth midwife, you know, how many births she had, what was the likelihood she was going to be there? Because there's a lot, I mean, it's true in the private sector as well, in the hospital sector, we can't always guarantee the obstetrician's going to be there. But this was important because really at the end of the day, you're solely reliant on that development and that rapport with that individual that you'd hope that he or she, male or female midwife, would be there at the time. So how did they, you know, say to you, yeah, look, I'm definitely going to be there? And what was their backup as well?
Yeah, and that's the thing. They can't guarantee they're going to be there because my midwife was just telling me yesterday that she had to back up for a colleague because she had three of her mums giving birth on the same day. Because it's unpredictable. Like, you don't know when these women are going to go into labor. And there's certainly no scheduling in a home birth, right? Because you can't induce. So how is that going to work? So there always needs to be two midwives anyway at the time of birth. So there always is a backup midwife anyway. And you will get to meet her, I mean, depending on your midwife. But so with my midwife, she said, okay, you my backup midwife, Mel, she'll come in and do one of your appointments so you can meet her, ask her questions, whatever. And that was good. And it was actually Mel from, if you guys have seen Birth Time, it's the lady that had the midwife who had the four cesareans. Yeah. So I felt like I knew her. I was like, oh, I know this face. And she was lovely.
And just one other question, I mean, just from a framework perspective, do they have backup with hospitals and an obstetrician beside them? And did you get to meet them and did you know where you were going in the unlikely event that, of course, you needed to go there?
Yeah. So there were a few options actually for the backup. So you could, for my midwife, she has visiting rights to Westmead Public and a lot of the midwives in Sydney do. So, I mean, this could vary depending on where you live, but the majority of the midwives do have visiting rights there. So for one of my backup options, I had two because I like to be organized. So my emergency backup option was my local hospital. If I was to transfer there, then my midwife would just become essentially a support person or a doula because she doesn't have visiting rights there. But my other backup, if it was a non-emergency transfer or if we found out that I had to birth in the hospital for whatever reason, was going to be Westmead. So she said she can book me in 10 minutes there. It's all online. So I didn't have to go in or do anything like that. I did have to go into my local hospital to do a whole appointment and like an admitting appointment. That was like an hour, spoke to them. And, so that's your kind of like your options with that if you want your midwife to continue your care. My midwife also has a collaborative agreement with an obstetrician in Westmead who is an amazing obstetrician too. And if for any reason throughout your pregnancy that you find out you need a cesarean, if you book in this option, then that particular obstetrician will do the cesarean or, you know, the induction or whatever it is. And you get to meet her as well if you choose that agreement. So I didn't choose that because I thought, you know, being my third pregnancy, pretty low risk. I was pretty comfortable in just, you know, having my midwife, but I did like having that option of, you know, if I do need to go to hospital, my midwife can remain my midwife. Good way to have your bases covered.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, going back to your previous question about overlap in birth, like from my experience anyway with my private midwife, she looks after 3 to 4 women a month. So obviously significantly less than in an obstetric or in a hospital. But 3 or 4 a month, the chances of overlapping is surely slim. Apparently it happens all the time, which is just bizarre. Happens, yeah. Women like to birth at the same time.
It's the moon.
It's something. But she would often send, like she would go to that, or she would be at that, the birth, and she would send her second midwife even just to look after a laboring woman, because I guess the time of actual birth is pretty unlikely to overlap. So she would often send her second midwife and then she'd go over when she was finished at that birth, or they'd swap. So can you chat us through kind of the later stages of your third trimester and leading up to your birth? Obviously, you're a hypnobirthing practitioner, which you weren't in your previous two, but you'd done the course. So how did you prepare for birth differently to your previous two?
So, I did ramp up my practice towards the end. I was doing, weekly or fortnightly chiro. I was seeing a women's health physio. So I was, doing all the things that I kind of didn't know to do the last couple of pregnancies. And I think, working with women, they're telling you all these things they've done in their pregnancy, and you think, okay, I'm going to try this too. So I was really excited to see all these health professionals. It was great. It was just that waiting game, waiting for my baby. I was not, I was excited for them to come, but I wasn't okay, you have to come now, because I knew what was waiting for me on the other side. I knew what newborn life was like, and I thought, I'm just going to enjoy it. So every day I was like, I'm going to enjoy this day. I'm going to go for a swim. I'm going to go get a coffee, whenever I want. It's, just enjoying not having a schedule or someone to answer to. I've got the other two, but they're pretty, I could leave them at home with my husband. It's fine. Just really enjoying myself up until the day.
So you're heading in towards the latter part of pregnancy. Telltale signs, in terms of, obviously third time round, a lot of women, it's surprising, being in tune with your body, you tend to sort of appreciate when things might happen. When did you sort of feel like, hey, listen, my body's starting to get there?
Yeah, I didn't have a feeling. Some people have a feeling, oh, it's going to happen tomorrow, or they can feel things are different. I didn't know until it started happening. But even then, it was early labor, and I did think that it was the real deal. So I was having signs of early labor. So I woke up in the middle of the night with some light cramping, and this was about one day before my due date. So I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting, bit of cramping. I'll go to the toilet, and normally our house is such a dumb design where the ensuite has no door. Don't ask. So I go to the door with the light off. I go to the toilet with the light off because I don't want to wake anyone up. So I thought, I'm going to bring my iPhone torch with me because I have a feeling something's going to come out. And, so I went to the toilet, had my little torch with me, so awkward. And then I could see there was some light pink discharge, and I thought, oh, okay, something's happening with the cervix here. And I thought, being that my second birth was so quick, I thought this time, oh, 100%, this is going to be quick. I better call my mum and tell her, I'll message my midwife, tell her oh, something's happening. And I call my mum, get her to come here because she's an hour away and she can just sleep over. And then when it ramps up, she'll be here. And so she came over, and then everything fizzled out by the morning.
Third babies. So, third babies.
100%. And my midwife told me, she said, sometimes what can happen is with third babies is that you have these long early labors. And then, once it picks up, it will just be really, really quick, but it'll be that long sort of warm up. Mm. And she told me that, and I still did. I was like, whatever. This must be it, and so my mom slept over, poor thing, for no reason. My kids didn't go to school the next day because I thought, oh, it could happen, so we don't have to do the whole pickup thing and whatever. And we just waited around all day. And it's not going to happen if you're waiting around for it, right? We all know that. So went to bed and kind of same thing. I think I was contracting it every 10, 15 minutes, but it was not intense at all. Here I am, as soon as it comes, I'm doing my breathing, I'm in the zone, and then nothing for 10, 15 minutes. It was nothing, right? So I was looking way too much into it. And then the next day I thought, look, it's still happening, same thing. Let's all go to school. Let's all live our life. Let's pretend it's not happening, which is exactly what I say in classes. Ignore it till you can't, right? Don't read too much into it. obviously be mindful, oh, yeah, like it's happening every now and then, and look for some signs, but, you know, carry on about your day if you can. If you are able to walk around or go for a coffee, like it's not the real deal, you know? So I thought, let's practice what I preach. And I just, you know, went out for coffee. I had a chiro adjustment. I walked there, walked back, you know, had a full on day, and thought I would start dinner. So this is like two full days now of that kind of early labor. And as I was cooking dinner, it started to get closer together and started to get stronger. So I think it was 1 in 5 minutes, one every 5 minutes. So 2 in 10. And it started to feel like, oh, okay, me cooking is not distracting me enough. So something's happening here. Firstly, I better cook dinner quickly and eat because, you know, and wash the dishes because I wanted the dishes to be, to be like not in the sink when I'm giving birth. You know what I mean? Like imagine being in the birth pool and then looking over and there's like a mountain of dishes. So stressful. So, I put the TENS machine on and that was amazing. I never used the TENS before. I'd always spoken about it in classes saying these are your options. You can use a TENS machine. You know, you really should. What do you have to lose? But I never tried it myself.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. I had it from then on. It didn't come off. Spoiler alert, till I got in the pool. So I had that on and that really helped me through cooking dinner. And eating dinner, I had to stop. Like I'd be eating my food and then the contraction comes like, okay, eat again. So, yeah, because I thought, who knows how long this is going to be, if I'm going to be able to eat, you know, better get my energy up. And, yeah, so I let everybody know that it was happening. And, yeah, so I called my midwife, called my mum, and after a while, I think I was, so times are a bit iffy, you know, 5 p.m. I'm going to say it started to get intense. And by 7, my husband said, maybe we should call the midwife and tell her to come. So it did. My midwife was right. Long early labor. And then when it starts, it's on. Yeah. Hot and heavy. So, yeah, so we were just laboring. My mum came. My midwife ended up coming. I think we called her to come around 7:30. So she got here around 8:30, 8:45. They came pretty much, they left as soon as they got the call. So because they live far away. And she brought her second midwife with her. She said, given that I'm a third time mum, we're not going to wait around and then call the second to come. It's like, we're going to come together. So yeah, they came around 8:45. The photographer came at 8:45 and they were there. My kids were on their screens with my mum, whatever, out of, you know, my hair, basically. And I was just like laboring in my lounge room. I had my fairy lights. So my husband set up the fairy lights, the birth pool. I had my like affirmations everywhere on my wall. And so I was using a lot of movement, the TENS machine, I was on the birth ball. So all the things that I'd used, you know, the birth ball I loved in my previous birth as well. And, yeah, everything was great. And then started fizzling out again. So I had 3 in 10 minutes and then it was down to 2 in 10 minutes again. And I felt like even though no one was watching me. So the midwife came in, she did the monitoring, Doppler, blood pressure, you know, whatever. And then she went into the kitchen and left me alone. The photographer was just like really in the background. My kids weren't around, but I still felt like pressure to perform. I don't know if that sounds weird, but you know how they say when you go to the hospital, your labor slows down and you think, well, if I have a home birth, well, then it won't slow down, right?
Yeah.
But someone's still coming into your space, as comfortable as I am with her, with the midwife or midwives, it still feels like, oh, I called them here. Did I call them for nothing?
And now you start overthinking and
100%. So I was just like overthinking everything. Oh, it's fizzled out. Oh, I'm tensing my pelvic floor. Maybe I should try this. And I started analyzing the birth and this is what really got me. My mind is the thing that really slowed everything down. And I can now relate. I don't even know the medical side, but I can relate to when they say midwives find it hard to switch off their brain in labor.
Mm.
Because sort of like the more you know, the harder it is, right? And I, like I said, I'm not even, I don't know anything about the medical side of birth. I'm just thinking about, you know, the physiology and the hormones and stuff like that. And it's still messing with my mind. Mm. So I had to really turn that off. So I was having a chat with my midwife at around 9:30, 10 o'clock, saying like, I can't turn off my brain. Like, I keep thinking, I called you here for nothing and you guys are just waiting around. And they were fine. They, like, made a tea in my kitchen. They found everything. They found where the kettle was and, like you know, they just helped themselves. They found the tea. I didn't even know I had some of those teas. And they were relaxing. And my midwife said, we're going to be here as long as you need us.
Mm.
There's no rush. That's just what I needed to hear. Like, we're going to be here. It's fine. She said, why don't you go upstairs and upstairs with Michael, go lay down, because my kids had gone to bed because there was no point in them waiting around, right? We didn't know how long it was going to be. They'd gone to bed and I could hear my son crying too because we weren't with him. So I think that also was getting to me. And my midwife said, "Go, you guys go lie down with Adrian, my son, in bed, and just lie on your side. Put a pillow, you know, between your legs, have your tens on, relax, see if you can have a little cuddle and a snooze." I was like, okay. She said, we'll just be downstairs. Okay, cool. So I went upstairs and did exactly what she said. I lied down on my side. I hugged Adrian, gave him a nice cuddle. So there's that nice boost of oxytocin, which I really needed. He fell asleep like straight away. And then I was, you know, already more relaxed and everything just ramped up. After that, it was like there were just one after the other and they were so intense. And I was lying on my side, which made them feel more intense as well. But I just felt like I needed to relax that pelvic floor. Like I just kept tensing every time I had a contraction. So I really needed to relax. So that position was just, you know, was good. I was rocking a little bit. And I didn't know this, but my midwife, who said she was going to be downstairs, was upstairs sitting behind. She was in front of my room, just sitting behind the door. And I started becoming more vocal. So she was timing the contractions. And I saw in her notes I was having, like, I think she said 4 and 10 minutes or something. So they're all, like, really, really close together. And she was just there timing them, and I just – I think having that feeling like I wasn't being watched and observed really allowed me to turn that brain off and allowed the hormones to just like flow again, which was, yeah, really great. And after a while, I think I was in my room for about an hour or so, and it felt like 5 hours because the contractions were just so close together. And obviously you have no concept of time in labor either. But it felt like I was in there for ages. And my husband went out to go get me a drink and he saw my midwife just sitting there in the darkness. And she's like, I don't want to bother her, but just let her know that I'm here. You know, we haven't abandoned her or anything. And just ask her if she wants me to come in and monitor the baby. Otherwise, just come downstairs when she needs to push or she needs to poo. I was like, okay. So my husband told me, he said, do you want her to monitor the baby? I said, yes, I do, actually, because up until that point, I had been very focused on the baby's movements. I knew how he or she, I didn't know what it was at the time. I knew how frequently they were moving and, you know, felt good and whatever. And then once the contractions got really intense, I was like, I haven't even noticed them. So, yes, can you please come in and monitor? That will make me feel much better. So she came in, she monitored the baby. She did a little bit of acupressure on my back. I had started shivering and got really cold. And I was like, oh, is it really cold in here? Obviously, I was in transition, but, you know, I just felt like, oh, I'm in a bra and undies. That's why I'm so cold. and like I should have known, but anyway, it's good. I wasn't analyzing anymore. So, and then my midwife said, oh, you know, you're almost there. You're shivering. I can feel like your sacrum's kind of bulging, like, you know, everything's really close. And then I told her, yeah, but I feel like I still can't relax my pelvic floor. And she said, go sit on the toilet. I said, yeah, duh. What I say at every class, sit on the toilet, dilation station. So I sat on the toilet. I sat backwards on the toilet for a while. Actually went to the toilet a couple of times too. So, you know, did a nice poo in front of my husband, which is the first time that's happened. So that was really beautiful, really romantic. And but it was good emptying it all out before getting in the pool. So yeah, sat there for a while and then I thought, yeah, no, nah, I got to go downstairs. Like it's getting close. So, you know, past midnight now.
Intuitively, I think it's quite good to also be conscious of the baby as well. I mean, obviously you were worried, well, you sort of had switched off from your own birthing process, which is fantastic. And I can see that in the way that you're describing it, this idea or this notion of having to be on a clock is almost counterintuitive. And a lot of patients or a lot of women feel that even in the private or public sector that there's got to be something they've got to perform to. But the reality of the situation is, in part, you know, your true test of being able to go through labour is just allowing yourself the permission to do what you need to do in a nice space, and that can be achieved in the private sector and certainly in the public sector as well. I see a lot of my own patients, and I work with a doula, and we put the tea lights and we do all that sort of stuff, and it's quite a calming environment. And I think it's also really great that you actually instructed the midwife to come and listen to Bubba, because we do know that, you know, in terms of what as a medical professional, whether we be a midwife or we be a doctor, we want to listen in on baby at least every 15 to 30 minutes just to make sure that their heart rate's okay. I always liken a bit of, you know, having a labor a little bit like every time you have a contraction, it's like putting a baby, if you imagine that the whole labor process is like trying to get a baby from one end of a swimming pool to the other end of a swimming pool, a 50-meter swimming pool. The baby doesn't care how long it takes to get there. You can take, you know, a day. You can take, you know, a day and a half. It doesn't matter. You can take 10 minutes. It doesn't matter. As long as the baby gets there and as long as they get there safely, they don't really care. So every time you have a contraction, it's like putting the baby underneath the water, walking a couple of centimetres down the swimming pool and then bringing the baby out. And so, you know, if you're having all these really frequent contractions, it's really important we check in on Bubba, have a bit of a listen and make sure baby's okay. And these telltale signs that you're sort of going through in retrospect, you're saying, oh, wow, I was obviously transitional then. I mean, it's awesome that you're able to, I think it was great that you were able to disconnect during the process of your own birth, because it probably made you enjoy it a hell of a lot more rather than be strangled by the knowledge that you had.
You know? Exactly, yeah.
So you're upstairs, the midwife sort of popped in, had listened to Bubba. You're now feeling transitional because you are getting, did you end up then coming downstairs? Are we at that point yet?
Yeah. So we came down, I think, at 12:20. I think 12:18, because I have a photo. The photographer took a photo of us walking down the stairs and you can see my husband's phone. It says 12:18. I was like, oh, good. And, yeah, we went downstairs and they were topping up the pool because my husband had filled the pool up when we called the midwife. He filled it up to the minimum and he thought, oh, we can top it up with hot water. But it had been a few hours, so the pool was, like, cold already. So the midwives are filling it up with, you know, they've got the hose. They're boiling kettles and pots in my kitchen. Again, they help themselves and they're just like boiling and then, you know, putting it in. And I just sat on the toilet downstairs in the meantime. Again, backwards on the toilet, TENS machine on. Every now and then I'd get off the toilet, lean on my husband. And looking back, I feel like I didn't have any vaginal examinations. That's something else that I requested not to have. So I didn't know exactly how dilated I was, didn't really care. I didn't even think about it during the labor, which was great. But looking back now, I think I was probably already complete, like I was fully dilated. And I wasn't allowing myself to be relaxed enough to push. Because I was still tensing that pelvic floor It's like I was keeping the baby in. It's like, no, it's not happening.
The way I liken that too, and I say this to a lot of women, is imagine your pelvis is a bit like a basketball hoop, and the netting underneath the basketball hoop is a little bit like your pelvic floor. So if you're coming up and you're doing a layup and you're about to do a slam dunk, but I'm holding the netting underneath really tightly, then as you're trying to bring the ball through the hoop, the ball's not going to drop. And so that idea of just relaxing the netting or relaxing the pelvic floor then is going to allow the baby's head to descend through the pelvis, just like that basketball through the basketball hoop, and allow the baby's head to turn around into the right position, obviously, generally speaking, face down, or away, looking away from the pubic bone in order to facilitate the birthing process. So, yeah, the mental relaxation or trying to visualize yourself relaxing the pelvic floor is particularly important in allowing that baby's head to descend through that latter part of the stages of labor.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that way of thinking of it. Yeah, so I was doing lots of things to try and do that, like facial relaxation, relax the jaw, going to the toilet.
Yeah. All the things.
And
it's so hard to do. Like, in theory, it's, brilliant. And obviously we all both talk about it. And me as a midwife, Joe as an obstetrician, you as a hypnobirthing practitioner. But it is harder in reality. So it's even practicing that in pregnancy, I think, is a really key component as well. Just practicing those slow breaths and relaxing all of your pelvic floor muscles
Exactly. And I know that I already know that I'm someone who tenses their jaw. And so I clench my jaw. That obviously is directly linked to the pelvis.
Yeah.
So that's something that I consciously worked on in the pregnancy as well, relaxing my jaw, doing lots of facial relaxation, lots of breathing. So I was already mindful of that already.
I did that in my wife's labor. I said, relax the forehead, relax the jaw. And she goes, shut up.
Leave me alone.
I'm trying to help. Luckily, my wife, her last labor was only 45 minutes, so I didn't.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So it was pretty quick.
See, but that's third babies. It's so like unpredictable.
Wild babies. Wild card, yeah.
Absolutely.
Such a wild card. Third babies.
So yeah, I already instructed my husband, do not talk to me.
Yeah.
So they knew. I also told my midwife, don't talk to me unless I talk to you first, because that's just so annoying when you're trying to focus and someone's talking to you. Well, for me personally, some people love having a chat. Women are so different in labor, but I was like, no. So he was just very much hands-on, which is what I told him to be, like acupressure points, let me lean on you, that kind of stuff. Even the toilet got too intense. I could feel it was making it way more intense, so I got off. I still had the tens this whole time. Slowly made my way from the toilet to the bath, which is not that far. But, when you're contracting very close together, it takes a long time to get there because I just stop every now and then. And then the TENS machine died. And that was the worst part of my labor.
That is.
Because I was relying on it. And you know what? I don't think it was as much. I mean, it definitely was the sensation that helped me, but it was almost like that routine of it comes, you press the button, you relax, you breathe. It was like this nice constant that I had in my whole labor.
Did you ask the TENS machine why it didn't bring it back up? it should have brought it back up, shouldn't it? But that's really good lesson, hey?
Batteries, bring the batteries.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't think that it would die so quickly. Like it was only a few hours really. So if you have a lot of women are in labor for a lot longer than that and require a TENS longer than that. So yes, bring your batteries.
I had about 12 backup batteries with me.
Oh, did you?
3-day labor, so it was needed. Yeah, so we're on it.
Quite a few batteries, yes. So I was like yelling because it happened during the contraction. I pressed the button, it doesn't work. I'm like, the TENS batteries. The TENS batteries died. And I was like not talking really, and that it was so hard to get those words out to say TENS. So I threw it at my husband and he quickly, put the batteries in. And then that was good. And then I felt like I needed to vomit. So another sign, we're here, threw up and I thought, I need to get in this freaking pool, man. I hurry up. I was sort of thinking in my head, but I couldn't say it. And they were still topping up. And then my midwife said, yep, it's ready. And I ripped that TENS machine off and I just got in the pool. And I got in, I was like, oh, I can finally relax. Like, that's what it felt like. That pelvic floor that I just couldn't relax that whole time and doing all these things. The water, like, this, it's all I needed. And I had probably a couple of minutes of just nothing, like no contraction, just relaxation. And I was like, oh, yes, the calm before the storm, right? And then the next contraction comes and it's, I'm bearing down, I'm pushing. And my waters hadn't broken, but I felt, couldn't see anything, I had my eyes closed, but I felt that pop. And so on that first push, it was my waters breaking. So I felt that. And then the next push was the head.
Wow.
And I was like so vocal. I was really loud and I was just leaning into it. I was like, whatever. And I thought with the head this time, you know, I'm going to do like this, like visualize the lotus flower, you know, which is what I did last time. I was like really like quiet and not on purpose. It's just what felt right, you know, really quiet and breathing. And I had this lotus flower, I was visualizing for the crowning so I could relax. And this time I'm like, oh, like, you know, I'm making all the noises. And I just leaned into whatever, you know, and I instructed my midwife, please do not prompt me. Like unless there's any medical reason you need to prompt me to do something, like do not prompt me for the birth of the baby or the placenta. I don't want to be told like when to push or to even to slow down. Don't tell me to slow down unless it's like, no, you really have to. I want to just instinctively push the baby out. And I just felt like that was going to be the best for me for, you know, with tearing and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I just got that head out and, looking back on the video, I can actually see instinctively I'm slowing my breathing down. I didn't even do this consciously, but my vocalization had changed to more sort of like a panting, like kind of noise. And I thought, oh, like, oh, that's so clever, like that your body knows to do that. Yeah.
Incredible.
So good. And, yeah, the head was out and I was like, oh, my gosh. And I was just like, I didn't really know what was happening. I didn't even know the head was out. But then my midwife told me, like, the head's there. And then I touched the head. So I felt and touched the head. And I was in a leaning forward position over the bath or the pool. And I, put my hand down and I felt his hair. And it was all jelly, like this jelly head full of hair. And I was like, oh, my gosh, my baby, wow. And I started crying. And I just was never that emotional with the last two. So it was just so much more of a raw birth, really like in my emotions. And, yeah, so I felt his head and then the next push was the shoulders. So I waited for that next push. And actually now that I've got the, you know, footage from my lovely second midwife, did nothing during that pushing except for film, which is exactly what I told her to do. So unless you're required, you're just filming the baby coming out. Like the midwife does the raw footage, you know, like straight up vagina bum view, because it's like vagina's an arm, you know, it's like nothing. Yeah. And the photographer's doing the, you know, kind of, the beautiful, around the corner, pretty cinematic, you know, beautiful. So I've got the midwife's raw footage and actually his head came out, but his chin didn't fully come out. So he was kind of like, it wasn't a full dystocia, obviously, where the shoulder gets stuck, but it's kind of like he had to rotate his shoulder a little bit. So his chin was not fully out and then that next, and I hadn't had a tear at all. And then that next contraction, he rotated and you can see like a little proof of blood. And it's the way that he rotated. I had that little internal vaginal tear. So I didn't have any perineal tearing from the head but just from the shoulders. So his shoulders came out and he just like, you know, swam out after that. And I picked him up. I didn't even know if I had picked him up. I couldn't remember. I was just not there. Mm. It's not until the midwife told me, did I catch him? She's like, yeah. I can't even remember.
Yeah.
And I caught him and brought him to my chest and I was so emotional and just couldn't believe it. Like, oh my, I did it. I can't believe it. It finally happened. Like a couple of hours ago, I was like, is it happening? And it actually happened.
So surreal.
And I did it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's just everyone's so emotional. My daughter and my mum came downstairs just for the pushy. So my midwife ran up and got them when I was getting in the pool and they came and they watched. Yeah, my son, they didn't attempt to wake him up, but I don't think he would have been like he's really sensitive. Like if he saw a bit of blood or if he saw me making those noises, I think he would have been like, are you okay, mum? And my daughter was like, this is cool. Like,
yeah. How amazing for her to see her brother be born.
Yeah.
How beautiful. Yeah. And so, sorry, you didn't know it was a boy at that point.
No, I didn't know. Yeah. So I put him on my chest and then my daughter straight away is like, what is it? And I'm like, oh, I'm still landing, you know. Yeah. I'm like up in, with the fairies. And after a while I was like, okay, let's check what it is. And, it was a boy. So special. She wanted a girl, but it's okay. She wasn't too upset, so that's fine. So.
And at that point, did you have a name for him?
No, he didn't have a name for like 3 days.
Okay.
So he was a little no-name baby.
Yeah.
Eventually, we called him Roman.
Yeah.
So eventually, we decided on it. So I just chilled in the bath. We did the breast crawl, which is something I didn't do last time. Mm. I really wanted to birth the placenta in the water as well. But I think we were waiting there for like an hour. And wow. I had asked for no prompting. So we're waiting for an hour and the bath had – like the water had gotten so cold. So I was like, yeah, let's get out. And like, you know, the baby was getting cold. So let's get out and move to the couch. And I thought maybe if I move and get out of the pool, the stepping out of the pool, maybe prompt me to feel that urge to push the placenta. But anyway, you know, we laid on the couch. So while I was chilling in the pool, breastfeeding, the midwives had laid towels and tarps and all the things all over the couches and the floor. So you don't have to worry about mess. If you're thinking about, if your concern about home birth is mess, it's like they take care of everything. It's great. Mm. So, I breastfed him on the couch and then I tried to breastfeed him in a squatting position. And he, by the way, was on the breast this whole time.
Wow.
Which I thought was really weird. He was breastfeeding, that whole like hour. Like he just wouldn't get off my boob. The midwife was like, oh, okay, this baby's like a booby lover from the beginning. but, you know, I thought, yeah, that was great because hopefully that will help my placenta, help that to be birthed. So, you know, get that oxytocin, get the cramping. And I was feeling those surges and I was feeling really nauseous. Like, oh, this is, to me, it felt worse than the labor because it's like the baby's out, you know, and I'm trying to enjoy it. And now I'm feeling these surges that are as strong as the, you know, the labor contractions, and I'm feeling nauseous too. So I tried different positions. I got to a point where I was like, I'm going to try pull it out. And the midwife's like, well, you do whatever you want to do. It had been an hour and a half now. So I was trying and I was over it. And then my midwife was like, okay, I'm good. Like, do you want me to help you? You know, even though I told her not to do so, but you know, the cord had moved down. Like he was really, my son was like on my, pretty much my abdomen at first. And then as the placenta obviously was moving down, he was slowly reaching up higher and higher. So obviously like, you know, there had been some movement, but I just wasn't feeling the urge to push still an hour and a half later. After all that trying, we'll just slide on the couch. And then she gave a pull, the midwife pulled on the cord, which I never wanted initially. So it's funny how, you know, ended up that way. And I immediately felt the urge to push and did a giant push and it was half out. And then I did another giant push and then it came out and it was a huge placenta. The midwives were like, what the heck? This is a huge placenta. I hadn't had much bleeding or anything before that, and I didn't have much after. So, you know, we had the I had opted personally, I don't want the Syntocinin unless it's medically needed. So it was there, you know, if I needed it, but I didn't have much blood loss or anything like that. So all good. And the placenta came out all nice and intact, just really huge. And then my midwife said, maybe that's why that baby was on your breast the whole time. Like, and you needed a little bit of help. So that was, yeah, that was cute.
I thought I might just butt in a little bit, just because I think, you know, obviously people are going to be listening to this and wonder, why do midwives in a hospital setting suggest that we do controlled cord traction and also bring the placenta out in somewhat of a timely fashion? And I'm not dispelling what you did, and it's absolutely fine. And we talk about choices, but we talk about also evidence in terms of, you know, medical or midwifery and obstetric care. If there's one thing that we can do as midwives and doctors, and the thing that saved many women's lives over the course of the last 100 years, it's, well, in fact, even less than that. We're probably only talking the last 50 or 60 years, probably since the 1950s, has been really the active management of the third stage of labor. And when we talk about medical necessity, you know, it's a bit like a prophylaxis. You know, we wanted to, prevention is always better than cure. And women can, and you were very fortunate, Tina, but women can lose a hell of a lot of blood soon after the birth of their baby. And the longer the placenta remains within the uterus, the greater the chance that actually potentially occurs. And so generally speaking, and I don't want people to feel fearful of us as obstetricians and midwives actively managing the third stage of labor, because it is to prevent having a sense or a lot of blood loss. But what the reason why we do it is, if you imagine the placenta, or the uterus rather, is a bit like a massive Aussie rules or rugby football. And in the middle of that, inside the bladder of the football, is this massive stake. That's the placenta. Every single place that placenta meets that rubber within the uterus, there's little blood vessels that are going in and out, in and out, in and out of that. So as the baby's born, what ends up happening is that the uterus realizes, I've done my job now, thank you very much, and I'm going to allow for the separation of this placenta. And as we separate as the placenta potentially separates, then there can be what we term concealed bleeding that happens behind the placenta. And so a woman's uterus can fill up with a huge amount of blood, and we can't see it because the placenta is blocking the outlet of that blood through the cervix. So imagine that stake has sort of moved away from the bladder and now sort of sitting at the sort of the pointy tip of the footy, and the blood's just filling up behind, and it's not coming out because the stake's in the way. So allowing for that birthing process, for that placenta to be birthed, and you know, most of us want the placenta out within 30 minutes. Again, that's a very medicalized our way of approaching the placenta, is in order to reduce the rates of postpartum hemorrhage. So we actively manage that by giving an injection, and that's to help the, you know, you've done the natural version of oxytocin, but we also know that giving synthetic oxytocin, so Syntocinon, is quite good. I now give Durotocin, which decreases the chance of having any nausea and vomiting afterwards. And then we place controlled cord traction to bring the placenta out into the world. And it's interesting, having done some relief work in Mongolia, where I went, I've only gone once and I hope to go back again, but how the system there was moving very much away from being passive in terms of the management of the third stage of labor to more an active role, because they realized that there was a reduction in postpartum hemorrhage. So don't be fearful of it. Obviously choose what you want to do, but understand that there's a reasoning behind it. It's not just because we want to pull the placenta out quickly and have things over and done with. It's more because there is a lot of evidence behind this method always to our madness.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the birth too, right? Like I have a lot of women who say, yeah, if everything's physiological, you know, the baby comes out without help, I'm going to go ahead and do a physiological placenta birth. But then what happens after the birth, whether it's in the hospital or at home, doesn't really matter. They feel like they're not in the birth zone anymore. So maybe in the hospital that could look like they've birthed their baby. Then there's people coming in, they're touching them, you know, there's the bright lights, all that stuff. And they think, I'm not actually comfortable anymore, and I feel like getting the Syntocinin. Like, so sometimes even women who have made an informed choice not to have that Syntocin change their mind. Because, yeah, even though they don't have those risk factors at the birth, they feel like afterwards it's like, oh, that environment has changed and I actually need it.
Yeah. Mm. And I think your environment and people like the idea potentially in your case of, and Eliza as well, of having a birth within your home, so within the confines rather of your own sort of homely environment. But, you know, and this is probably because I've got access to a wonderful doula who works with me as well, but the ability to transform any room into an environment that's calming is also, you can have exactly the same experience as what you've alluded to, Tina, within the confines of a hospital, but you've just got to be a bit prepared. You've got to bring in the tea lights. You've got to bring in the birthing pool if you want to. Yeah, the bouncy balls are always there. You can change things up. You can put, I've had women bring in their own doonas and their own pillows and a whole range of things, put all their birth affirmations up on the wall. So you can create a space, even if home birth's not for you, you can create a space in any environment that you want to that makes you feel familiar. You know, people put up photos of loved ones, you know, passed away grandparents, and they want them to be part of the whole process. Dogs. Photos of dogs. I've seen.
Yeah, I thought you meant like a real dog for a second.
No.
Pretty sure they're not allowed. Yeah, right.
Photos of dogs have been in the rooms as well. So there's a lot of things you can do. But it sounds like you had a wonderful experience. When you look back on things now, what are the highlights in terms of your experience? And, you know, things that you, number one, highlights, great things, but things possibly you may have changed, because obviously, you know, in every birth there's something that you wish you could have done differently or something that you wished happened differently.
Yeah, I think the highlights were just that family-centered birth that I had where everyone was kind of involved. My daughter was there. Just that beautiful environment that we welcomed my son into. Just him, putting him on my chest is just like the best part. And just everyone being there, everyone you love, you know. So that was definitely the best part. The thing that I would have changed is I would have gotten the pool earlier. That's what I would have done. But obviously, you know, in hindsight, I didn't know how long it was going to be. And you were often told, don't get in the pool too early. You know, it could slow things down, or, you know.
Well, the water will go cold.
Or anything, or, you know, do a nice big poo in the bath or whatever. Doesn't matter, they clean it up. But, you know, like there's just these things you think, oh, just save it to the end. Mm. And I didn't know when the end was going to be. So that's the only thing that I would change. But everything else was, amazing. Such a great learning experience. I mean, I also would have changed turning off my brain a little earlier, but I learned a lot from that experience because, yes, I had a beautiful hypnobirth that second time in the hospital. It was amazing, but it was also an easier birth.
Mm.
It was a lot easier. Like, I made no noises in him coming out. The contractions I felt in this third birth when I was cooking dinner, that was the intensity of the end of my second labor.
Were you induced in your second?
No, that was a natural birth.
Natural, yeah.
Yes. So natural birth in a private hospital.
Yeah.
And I had the interventions in the public. So that's why I often say to people, it's not always, you know, the setting. It's exactly what you were saying, is just being prepared. And this is what I teach in the hypnobirthing classes, is setting up a calm environment where you feel comfortable, the fairy lights, whatever, to allow those hormones to flow, the oxytocin, the endorphins, you know, all that good stuff. But that's exactly what I used the second time. But the intensity was way less in the hospital than it was at home. But on that, I also had a backup in case of hospital transfer plan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had a cesarean plan. So I think it's important to know your options so that if things don't go to your original plan, that you can say, oh, okay, I had a cesarean, but I asked for skin to skin, or I asked for this or that, because you were informed.
Absolutely.
You still have those preferences. So I still had that there. I typed it up and put it away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm not going to look at it, but it's there if I need it. So, luckily I didn't, and I had, most amazing birth ever. So, you know, my aim is really for anyone, no matter where they birth, how they birth, or who they birth with, to feel that empowered and on a high after their birth. That would be my aim for every woman.
Tina, thanks so much for sharing your story. It's been absolutely a delight to have a chat with you. And also from my perspective, I'll be honest, as an obstetrician, it makes it very difficult to discuss home birth because it's not something that we're very familiar with, and maybe we place we have a lot more of an internal barometer when it comes to risk and chances of events occurring. And as I said, having been involved in 330-odd births every year, I see a plethora of things. I see the births like yours where, yesterday one of my patients had a baby within 30 minutes and it was the most beautiful birth, but then I also see where things can go wrong and where I know that as an obstetrician, just like a pilot who needs to, crash land a plane, I need to be there in order to facilitate that birthing process to have a safe mama and a safe bubba. So it's very difficult then to come to a chat about home birth with that bias. And that's partly one of the things and why I said things at the very start that, you've got to choose a healthcare provider that doesn't have an internal bias. And if they do have that internal bias, then you need to seek other opinions and then make an informed decision. So I've had my internal bias sort of switched off a little bit today, which is awesome. But congratulations and thanks so much for sharing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'll send you my video so Please. You can watch that.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Baby Baking and Kid Raising. If you'd like to suggest a guest or connect and see more of us, then head to Instagram at Baby Baking and Kid Raising. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd be so grateful if you could hit subscribe and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever listening platform you use.
Please note that the information provided in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of a qualified healthcare provider regarding your own pregnancy, birth, and health conditions.